Welcome to The Weekly on WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. Today's show is a special episode about Juneteenth, made up of segments by our weekly team, Nina Auslander-Padrum, Eric Schenk, and Casey Troost. First, we have Nina and Eric's segment on the Oberlin Juneteenth Parade, how it is different this year, and addressing possible town and gown tensions as more students participate in the parade as part of the summer semester. Afterwards, we will be airing Nina Auslander's interview with Anissa Wyman, an administrative assistant at the college, about her personal involvement with planning Juneteenth festivities for the last decade. Finally, we have Casey Troost's segment on the history of Juneteenth as it became a nationally recognized holiday this year. She also interviews African-American locals in Oberlin on what the holiday means to them.
Hi, I'm Eric Schenk.
And I'm Nina Auslander-Padrum.
Juneteenth is a celebration of Black liberation, but not everyone agrees on who can celebrate and how to do so respectfully. In this piece, we attempted to explore some of the dynamics of the Juneteenth Celebration Festival, an annual event in Oberlin for over 20 years now. We looked specifically at the parade, an integral part of the celebration that typically features youth music and dance groups from town. This year's festival, African Americans, the struggle, the fight for freedom, and still yet invisible, came at a decisive moment in American history. On Thursday, June 17th, President Joe Biden signed into law the Juneteenth National Independence Day Act, officially making Juneteenth the 12th federal holiday. In many ways, this is indicative of a shift in the national dialogue around race. Despite curfews and lockdowns, Black Lives Matter protests broke out across the United States in response to the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and other unarmed Black men and women. Because last year COVID-19 prevented in-person Juneteenth celebrations, this was the first such gathering in Oberlin since the nationwide protests of last summer.
While many COVID-19 restrictions were lifted in time for this year's Juneteenth celebration, it was still the first large celebration in public many people had experienced in over a year. We were curious if people felt weird about being in public after so long.
Also, because this is the college's first ever summer semester, it was the first time a lot of college students were here to celebrate Juneteenth.
Before the Juneteenth Celebration Festival, Eric talked to college third year Lindsay Fenninger about her experience attending past Juneteenth celebrations at Oberlin and her decision to book O'Steel, the college's steel pan ensemble, to perform in the parade.
I'm Lindsay Fenninger. I use she, her. I'm a third year bio major, and I play tenor pan in O'Steel.
Do you remember the parade at all?
I remember one parade, yeah.
Did you ever participate, or were you just
no.
A bystander?
I was a bystander.
So is this going to be very exciting for you to be participating in it for the first time then?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so. I'm very excited to participate. I thought that bringing O'Steel into this would be really fun, especially since a lot of the community doesn't see O'Steel in the summer, so like to see them in the summer is like so fun, and the drums sound so amazing, so people are going to love it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to be able to kind of merge the college and the community a little bit in that way.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons why this should be a really good gig. Did you have any concerns, though, when you were organizing this gig, especially with how many white folks are in the band right now?
I did think about it, but then I thought back to how we communicate about how we create, but mm-hmm. kind of like appropriate, and just that we try to educate people and we understand that this came from Trinidad and Tobago, so we don't want to take credit for that, especially since it's not so well known yet.
Right.
And then I was also thinking, like, well, Trinidad and Tobago really isn't an American thing, which mm-hmm. Juneteenth is. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll just do, like, African diaspora. Because I know they do other performances there that are not necessarily African American things. They're
right.
From, like, Africa, like, from Africa and things
yeah.
like that.
Do you think it'll be interesting to have the college there, particularly with the way that students perceive whiteness and white presence on this campus and taking up space? How do you think it's going to be different with students there?
I hope it's more lively with students there. Sometimes it's a little like
Yeah.
Just because it happens every year, we have the same vendors usually.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that it will be like a bigger celebration and tap in.
Right. After the turmoil of the last 2 years with the rise of COVID and the visibility of Black Lives Matter protests following the murder of George Floyd, do you expect that the tone of this Juneteenth celebration might be different?
I'm hoping that there will be more of a sense of pride within the community, just because, like, realizing that we still have a ways to go. Even in Oberlin, we still have a ways. And just, like, a communal sense of pride and hope.
Yeah.
For, like...
Yeah. Do you have anything else you'd like to add? Takeaways you want anyone to have about Osteel performing or about Juneteenth this year?
I hope when people see Osteel, like, get a sense of how celebratory it is.
Yeah.
And how we are there the day, and not to, I don't want people to perceive us as, like, not belonging in the parade.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, there was this like Google Doc I filled out earlier about our band, and I included like the blurb from our website about like how this is from Trinidad and Tobago, and we teach people about steel pan, and like it's a celebratory thing, and I just really hope that people see that.
Before the parade started, we positioned ourselves on the corner of Main and East College Street, where people were gathering to watch the parade. Although the festival begins at 9 a.m., the crowd was pretty sparse until just before noon. The first signs of the parade began when a few people started to lean into the street to get a better view.
The parade featured groups from the community, including African royalty dancers, the Futuristics Baton and Drum Corps, and a local church choir. This year, two college musical ensembles, Osteel and OC Tycho, joined the more familiar parade lineup. Some participants passed out candy, much to the delight of younger children watching the parade. Many onlookers snapped photos or recorded videos of family and friends in the parade, while others danced along to the music. The whole parade only lasted a few minutes, but Osteel and OC Tycho, bringing up the rear, doubled back to perform one last song in front of Ben Franklin's. Not everyone was thrilled by the presence of the college groups in the parade. Chair of the Juneteenth Executive Board, Ade Sharpley, spoke strongly against Osteel's participation in the parade. Sharpley is the founder and director of Dance Diaspora, a semi-professional touring West African dance ensemble. Sharpley was also the Africana Studies Artist in Residence for many years before her retirement in 2017. Referring to Finninger, she indicated that the presence of one black band member did not make up for the whiteness of the group as a whole.
So you were saying that you kind of, especially with Osteel, you seem to have a few thoughts about the whiteness of those groups.
No, I just like inclusion and diversity, and sometimes I don't think people realize the importance of, especially when you're playing a traditional African or African diasporic art form, how important it is and to its integrity to have some people represented who are at least from the culture or from the groups or descendants.
To be clear, several Osteel band members have Trinidadian heritage, although they're not currently on campus as a result of the three-semester system.
Yes, I know you want to play every opportunity to play, but you have to respect that the event is an African-American event. And so therefore, you want to make sure you're as diverse as possible to make the integrity of the group and make it not look exotic, or what's the other word, when you borrow someone's stuff without them being represented,
the appropriation of it.
Of it. And then you don't want to take over. You want to gently play, you're in the parade.
Right.
You don't necessarily need to come. None of the other groups stopped and played. If everybody did, then that's represented, everybody's represented. But if you do that, then, and you're not as representative of the group that's having the festival, it looks a little bad.
Yeah. Well, do you think that, especially with like white folks who are here enjoying everything that is here, do you think that's different from the folks who are taking up space and getting that
It's
kind
different
of
when you're performing.
Yeah.
It's different when you're performing, and it's different when you're taking the stage at an event that is primarily African American or African diasporic, and you're also your group is not representative. You aren't making a statement that said, "We realize what we've got here, and we want to represent to the." You're humble. We want to represent to the best of our ability what we're doing. That's very different than just coming with the privilege and just taking over. And that's why people are squeamish about college students coming, because they don't always get it. And they think I'm being extremely mean when I say, you're not, you don't have any people of color hardly in your group. And it's kind of pushy. And it's disrespectful a little bit. You were in the parade. We welcomed you in the parade. Okay, let's push it.
According to Fenninger, Anissa Wyman, a board member who had a hand in organizing the parade, informed the college groups that they would be able to stop and perform a song at the end of the parade route due to the heaviness of their instruments. We also heard this from Wyman herself.
Because their instruments, their drums and things are so big, they don't travel very easily. So they're going to actually perform at the square, like in front of Ben Franklin.
However, Sharpley's concerns highlight the need for sensitivity at such an event. The intentions and context of the performance do little to alter the optics of white college students taking up more attention than black community members in the parade. Overall, though, Sharpley was positive about the level of respect and engagement college students had with the event.
Yeah, the students, most of them were extremely respectful, extremely clear, except for my folks over there.
O'Steel and O.C. Tycho.
But I think they were pushed to do that by someone.
Why?
Everyone else has been really understanding Juneteenth and being respectful and having a great time, and that's what we want.
Wyman, like Sharpley, also discussed the role of Oberlin College students at Juneteenth.
I'm going to be really excited to see so many students like in the square this year, and you know, being able to participate. And I always hope that the meaning behind the whole Juneteenth celebration like sinks in with people, that maybe people will even, you know, do more research about it or somehow apply information about Juneteenth in some of their papers that they're writing or projects they're working on in the academic classrooms.
Wyman also shared her thoughts about the meaning of Juneteenth.
To me, this is also an Independence Day. It is huge. It completely changed our country forever. Impacted, millions of people's lives and the whole United States. So I've always felt that Juneteenth is just as big of an Independence Day, worthy of just as big of a celebration, fireworks and everything else. When you look at what people made it through.
Hearing Wyman's answer about the meaning of Juneteenth, I was curious to hear if others at the parade felt differently about the meaning of the holiday. I asked Valerie Payne, a woman born and raised in Oberlin who now lives in Atlanta, about what Juneteenth meant to her.
Oh, that's kind of one you got to really think about. But the meaning is just to acknowledge that there was issues and there was problems throughout the country, and that we were eventually free to do the things that we need to do. We're still got a long way from where we need to be, but we're getting there.
I also spoke to Rhonda Coleman, the director of human resources at the Democracy Collaborative. She has been going to Oberlin's Juneteenth for about as long as it's been around.
So the meaning out in one word is hope. If we don't know or understand what happened in the past and where we're supposed to be, we don't have hope for what our future is.
Overwhelmingly, the people we spoke to were positive about the parade and the festival as a whole, but it was clear that this event was different. The atmosphere was joyous, but it was pointed. On one hand, Juneteenth represented a great sigh of relief for the city of Oberlin, but it also cannot be fully separated from the continued struggle for equality.
This concludes our episode on Juneteenth. Thank you to all of the people who talked to us for our episode. Anissa Wyman, Lindsay Fenninger, Valerie Payne, Rhonda Coleman, and Ade Sharpley.
This has been The Weekly. You're listening to WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College, and Community Radio.
And now we would like to air Nina's interview with Anissa Wyman about Juneteenth celebrations in Oberlin.
So when we were sort of chatting the other day, you mentioned that you've been involved in planning Juneteenth celebrations in Oberlin, I think you said, for around 10 years. So how did you first get involved?
Actually, it was when I was working at Oberlin College in the Office of Disability Resources back in about 2009. Mm-hmm. Phyllis Yarber-Hogan was the administrative assistant, and we worked together, and she just shared with me about Juneteenth and asked me to help. I think at that time she asked me to help do like a rock, paper, scissors contest. So something that even young children mm-hmm. could participate in, and the nostalgia of that type of game. And then she had asked me to help with the parade. And so I really wanted to help her and be a part of such a great celebration. She's the one who actually shared with me. I knew about Juneteenth and growing up in Oberlin and all the events, but I was never actually a part of it. So that's when I started really getting into the meaning of it, and it was rather moving for me.
Yeah. In what ways did it feel moving, if you wouldn't mind sharing that?
I think that by that time, you know, as you grow older, you get wiser, and certain things that maybe didn't have a whole lot of impact on you before begins to have impact, and you think of things differently. You begin to understand the significance of events and the importance and the way that it applies to your life. And I started thinking of things like, if it wasn't for these people living through the horrific events that they experienced and somehow still making it to be able to keep themselves alive, and even events that occurred, I mean, because this has been a struggle in the United States, mm-hmm. you know, up until this day, actually. But if these people didn't make it, I wouldn't be here. Mm. And so it was those types of thoughts that really made me realize that this was not just a party in the park, or it wasn't just, you know, a time to go to a festival and get out and see people around town, that this was very serious. It was something to be celebrated and commemorated.
Mm-hmm. And I guess you were sort of saying that you hadn't been involved in Juneteenth before sort of planning, but do you have any childhood memories of Juneteenth, or perhaps anything your parents or grandparents said to you about the day?
When I was a child, as far as I remember, I don't think that we had Juneteenth at that time.
Gotcha.
I remember taking my kids, and they would have like the black cowboys there, and you know, I had always seen white people on horses, and you know, having cowboy groups and things, or the movies you see on TV, but you don't really see, or I hadn't really seen, black people gathered together and calling themselves black cowboys and riding horses. It was a beautiful sight to see. And that was one of the greatest memories of Juneteenth, was the horses that they would have there with the black cowboys.
And to discuss now the parade, I was wondering who's participating in this parade and how the executive board, or perhaps you, selects them.
It's actually just a matter of just knowing groups, and
gotcha.
I just sort of reach out to people that I know. This is a tough time of year because a lot of people had made other plans, like as soon as COVID lifted. But then We were able to still, you know, get groups, because as of about 2 weeks ago, less than 2 weeks ago, we couldn't even have college students participate because the COVID protocol was still in place. They were not allowed to participate in any sort of city events, and the city couldn't come on college property, you know, things like that in a big group like that. So I'm just very thankful that, you know, that all of that changed. So we do have some of the college groups participating this year. I know like Osteel, Lindsay Fenninger had got in touch with me. I wish that we had more time, like more notice to be able to pull more groups in. I'm going to be really excited to see so many students like in the square this year and, you know, being able to participate. And I always hope that the meaning behind the whole Juneteenth celebration like sinks in with people, that maybe people will even, you know, do more research about it or somehow apply information about Juneteenth in some of their papers that they're writing or projects they're working on. In the academic classrooms.
Yeah, and you talked about earlier that how like personally you felt the meaning of Juneteenth took a while to sink in for you, and hopefully it will sink in for some college students as well, particularly those who are not Black, about the meaning of this day.
Correct, and I think that today, during this interview, and this is the day that President Biden did sign Juneteenth onto the books as a federal holiday. So that is very exciting. I feel that, you know, this is just like the Independence Day, the July 4th, the Independence Day for the United States, you know, was us getting our independence from the British. But it's like, to me, this is also an Independence Day. It is huge. It completely changed our country forever. Impacted, you know, millions of people's lives and the whole United States. So I've always felt that Juneteenth is just as big of an Independence Day, worthy of just as big of a celebration, fireworks and everything else. You know, when you look at what people made it through. And I can't wait to actually have my first day off work because of Juneteenth being a federal holiday. So hopefully, you know, June 19th or the first work day before or after, depending on what day it falls next year, you know, I cannot wait to have that day off to be able to just commemorate the freedom. It's not just a day for African Americans or for Black people. It's a day. It impacted every single American, and it should be an American holiday and an American Independence Day. So I believe that it should be celebrated and commemorated by all, just like July 4th is celebrated.
I guess just two more quick questions about the parade, if you wouldn't mind. So were there any considerations or concerns about racial representation that came into the planning process of the parade or perhaps like Juneteenth celebration more generally?
When it comes to celebrating Juneteenth, you definitely want Black representation in what you're doing, you know, for sure. I just feel that because this is possibly the only time that our college students in town will be able to really participate. I mean, it's not an event where you block out anyone who is not Black. So we just, you know, we took the groups who were willing to take part and things like that without really considering. I mean, these groups, I don't know who's in these groups. I don't know what the demographic makeup is of these groups. So I guess, no, that wasn't taken into consideration. It's just a day you want everyone to be able to just, you know, to celebrate. Also, because of the fact that it opened up to where college students could come so late in the game, you know, there wasn't really a lot of time to really, you know, get a whole lot of people as involved as they could have been if we knew all along, when we knew that this summer, Oberlin College is going to have this summer semester and students would be in town. The time was limited. And so therefore, it didn't become an issue of, you know, you have one group of people overshadowing the whole purpose or anything like that. So it really didn't come up.
Mm, gotcha. And I guess I was wondering, what kind of takeaways, if any, do the organizers of the event want spectators to get from the parade, or just more broadly, perhaps from Juneteenth?
I would say from the parade. The parade is more or less, you know, go out there and just be free. Do what your group does, and, you know, to show off and have some fun. It's more of the fun, festive side of the celebration of Juneteenth, the celebration of freedom. People who are in the parade don't have to follow, like, a theme or anything like that necessarily. If they do, that's fine. But it's the parade itself is more or less just, you know, you come with music and noise and, you know, people having a very nice time. It's the celebratory part of, one of the biggest celebratory parts of the festival. But as far as Juneteenth, the takeaway from the day, you know, I do hope that, I'm really excited about the fact that everything was signed by the president, President Biden, the President of the United States, today. So that, you know, come the event day after tomorrow, you know, that's something to be celebrated in addition to just the regular celebration of Juneteenth. That is huge that this is, that Juneteenth is going to become a federal holiday. That's really exciting. But I just hope that people take, if they didn't know about it, that they begin to learn more. And by learning about what took place June 19th in Texas in 1865, that then inspires them to want to learn even more about what took place and the way that people's lives were impacted and the impact that these things still have on people today, people on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, there's been recent events where, you know, you could just sort of see where we went backwards in a lot of ways. And it's like, I hope that we can somehow move forward. It will inspire everyone to learn more. I hope that people of races other than just being African-American, of course, I hope that African-Americans learn about their own history and it inspires that. But I hope that other people also realize that this is for all of us. It's all of our holiday, and we all need to learn about this. We all need to pay attention to this more. And, you know, that these things need to be taught. These lessons need to be taught in our schools and taught and passed on to other generations. So let's think about our ancestors. Let's think about, you know, because of these people, we are here today, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So that is an important piece that we haven't touched on, but I want to make sure that people know, and that hopefully people in the, it's a very brief ceremony, only about 30 minutes long. And, but it just really sort of makes the faith, you know, sink in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's my office usually on the eve of the Juneteenth festival, it sort of puts you into a very serious reflective mode the day before, so that you go to the festival, you know, with something, with more substance. Whereas this year, it's going to be, just so happens, this is the first time that I know of, that it's actually going to take place after the event. But either way, it's just important that it takes place. But Juneteenth is more than just, a lot of people feel that it's just, you know, the celebration in Tappan Square for Oberlin. It's just, you know, it's the food trucks and the events and festivities for that one day. But the Mayapa is extremely important. It's the reflective piece. And it's great to go and do the celebratory piece, but we have to reflect. And there's always a great history lesson that Adonike will always highlight something or someone during that ceremony. But Juneteenth events can take place all throughout the year. It doesn't have to be just, the festival seems to be the part that most people focus on, but Juneteenth is so much more. Like, we used to have a Juneteenth book club where we would read like a book once a quarter. There would be a different book and we would meet and then discuss it. There can be so many Juneteenth events throughout the year. It doesn't have to just be a festival one day out of the year. So I want to make sure that people know, because if other people may have some other ideas of different things to bring to the table that haven't been thought of, but it's something to reflect on all throughout the year.
Definitely. Yeah, I could not agree more. And I really appreciate you putting out that message about making sure that you celebrate, but that also that you reflect and to really understand the full holiday and also to understand it throughout the year as well. Well, I think that's the end of my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add or any questions you wish I'd asked? Anything like that?
I basically want to just thank you for coming to me. You know, like I told you the other day, I'm not the one who's the coordinator, but you wanted to more or less just get my experience with Juneteenth, and thank you for the opportunity.
This has been The Weekly. You're listening to WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio.
Here is Casey True's segment on Juneteenth with reflections from African-American locals on the significance of the holiday.
This summer was the first time I observed Juneteenth, which this year became a national celebration of African-American emancipation. Juneteenth is a shortening of June 19th, the anniversary of when the last enslaved African-Americans in Galveston, Texas, were freed. A few decades ago, Oberlin began to celebrate Juneteenth to commemorate its rich African-American history. The elaborate celebrations stretched over 3 days, and in some years, the town's production was so impressive that families traveled from other states to attend. As I wandered past food and product stands, the Juneteenth parade, live music, and information booths, I felt shocked to have never learned about the holiday before now. But I also hadn't been on campus in the summer before this year. Juneteenth was also new for much of the student body, since the college hasn't had a summer semester since the 1940s. Now that I was here, though, I decided to educate myself on the celebration's special relationship to the town, and talked with some of Oberlin's African-American locals about what the holiday meant to them. As a white reporter, I'm making this podcast self-reflective so that my position as an outsider and my influence on Juneteenth's depiction is as visible as possible. I'm also hoping that by showing this as a learning process, listeners will feel more open to connecting with African-American locals. A celebration of liberty, Juneteenth traces its origins back to the Emancipation Proclamation. Not when it was signed in 1863, though. According to the Smithsonian, Confederate territories had to be forced to give up control of the plantation economy, so actual emancipation hinged on the arrival of Union forces. For 250,000 enslaved people in Texas, that meant waiting 2.5 years after the proclamation was signed. This period of proclaimed yet unpracticed freedom still weighs heavily on the event's meaning. Valerie Lawson, chair of Juneteenth's 2021 executive board, still thinks about how much freed Texans must have lost during that time.
What does Juneteenth mean to you?
Freedom.
Freedom.
Breakage of bondage. The lack of respect for other people. Like, how dare you forget all those slaves in Texas for 2.5 years? Like, who was in charge of delivering that memo? You know, that's all I could think about when I was a kid, I didn't care about all that. I just wanted to eat, come down here and see what was going on. But as I got older, I got to read and research everything, and it's kind of baffling, like, how that happened. Oh, well, you know, they're slow. They don't know English and how to read. They won't know that the slaves are free. Let's just keep them in bondage a little longer until someone finally comes. It took 2.5 years for somebody to come and rescue them. So this means freedom, Independence Day, love, learning, teaching, because I think everyone should know the struggles.
As the date of true emancipation, the holiday also underlines July 4th's selective celebration of American liberty. In a presidential initiative statement, Africana Studies and Comparative American Studies professor Meredith Gadsby further explains this idea with a quote from Frederick Douglass. Quote, "When Frederick Douglass posed his question on July 5th, 1852, what to the slave is the 4th of July? He was pointing out the very contradiction that is inherent in the Black experience in America. On the 4th of July, we celebrate the freedom of this country from England, while Black citizens, although not fully recognized as such for much of this country's history, do not feel fully free." End quote. So, of Juneteenth's many purposes, one is to point out how African American history is dismissed in July 4th's hypothetically national reach. When Juneteenth began in Oberlin, it serendipitously repeated this point by replacing Oberlin's Heritage Day celebration, which, since 1983, had expanded upon July 4th to celebrate the history of the entire town, including white abolitionists. Here's Adenike Sharpley, a professor of dance and a member of this year's Juneteenth Executive Board, to explain more.
What was the beginning of your relationship with the Juneteenth celebration?
I was in town, and Priscilla Steinberg, who ran the Oberlin Commerce Department, had been doing Heritage Days. It was a celebration of Oberlin heritage. Hmm. And year after year, she'd done this community event. It's like a little festival. But she said it got monotonous a little, and no one really helped her. She would put together her group of volunteers, and this, for maybe a couple years, or maybe 3 years, I helped her work on Heritage Days. I'd help her bring in entertainment. I had dancers, they would dance. Just help her.
Shelley Shepherd, who's lived in Oberlin for 40 years, said that before Juneteenth, Heritage Day's universal approach to history took away from the significance of its African-American empowerment.
What was Juneteenth like when it started?
It first started out as Heritage Days, and then, you know, somebody said, no, we need to do it as Juneteenth, which is always scary because Heritage Days does not signify a truth. It's all encompassing. It doesn't give you a chance to be celebrating what it really is, a truth. Mm-hmm. It was over a lie. Heritage Day says something totally, what's the word? Washed down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
What is the lie?
The lie was that for Juneteenth, the slavery had ended, I think it was like 5 years, in Texas, and they didn't tell anybody. So hopefully that Juneteenth will be able to survive, because there's we need to have one holiday until we get many more. It says, you know, they don't have to apologize for anything. Not that we do as a people. I can't speak for everybody, but it's just, yeah.
Apparently, the lack of enthusiasm wasn't only felt by Shepherd before Juneteenth began. Professor Sharpley told me that Priscilla Steinberg, who had been organizing Heritage Days, saw such a drop in interest that the celebration needed to change. The exact beginning of Juneteenth is contested. But Professor Sharpley was one of the major sources of motivation for an early Juneteenth celebration in 1996.
And so she was saying how tired she was becoming of doing this event. People weren't really interested, it seemed like. And she said, well, is there something else we could do? And I said, well, there's a holiday called Juneteenth.
for African Americans. It's when they found out they were free. I believe it was in Texas. I think it's Galveston. I may not be correct. And they found out 2 years or more after the Emancipation Proclamation. And when they found out, they had this big celebration, joyous celebration. And they had vendors, you know, people sold things, they danced, they had food, they had, you know, cultural, just everything. So she said, okay, well, let's do, the first festival was called Heritage Day / Juneteenth. So it went over well. It's okay. So from that time on, I helped the whole time that she was head of the commerce. I did Juneteenth.
It went over so well that the Oberlin News Tribune, a local newspaper, reported at least 1,500 people in attendance. Miss Margaret Christian, an honorary Juneteenth board member and local historian who has helped to organize Juneteenth for over 10 years, said that this celebration is uniquely special for Oberlin because of the town's exceptionally rich African American history.
Well, Juneteenth allows this town once a year to celebrate the magnificent history of African Americans that came here. They came to Oberlin in a time of the Great Awakening, the awakening for Black people in their struggle for freedom. They went through those stages and they continued to move on to every aspect, to aspects where the college and the town knew each other, related to each other, and they have always been reverend. The college has always been reverend by African Americans in Oberlin. With the problems they've had over the years, they have organized themselves. They once had many organizations which allowed them to record their own history, though no one was doing it except Beaglestone. He's the only one ever wrote a history about them. And it allowed them to be able to have their Juneteenth. And it's a different Juneteenth because it always works on what is the history. And that is because they had a history and genealogy group that really supported the Juneteenth and ran the Juneteenth. It was a time in which Black people were in total control, not financially. The city helped finance, but it was Black people celebrating themselves, as well as whatever the outer, larger community in the United States was celebrating. There was always a special focus on the history of African Americans in Oberlin.
Has that changed at all now?
Yes. Well, what we have is a aging population, a dwindling of a town, and new ideas and new ventures have to be made. Juneteenth, now at this point, because of the genealogy and history group, is in aligned with the historical group of the town now.
They are aligned now?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they will have to make the decision on what Juneteenth is to be made in the future.
Ms. Lawson added that within this history, Oberlin carries especially strong messages of freedom as a site on the Underground Railroad.
Juneteenth is part of Oberlin, and I think it's good because the Underground Railroad went through Oberlin. Slaves going to Canada came through Oberlin. This is the passageway to freedom. So it would only be right to have Juneteenth here as a national holiday every year. So on the 10th of every year in June, we have our festival, our Muafa, and our Potter's Field.
This has been The Weekly. You're listening to WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College, and Community Radio.
This year's Juneteenth focused specifically on celebrating the African-American figures excluded from history books. Oberlinian LaTanya Fenderson Warren was this year's feature poet, performing Forgotten History from her newest book, When I Look Over My Shoulder. She read it to me when we met.
No one can eat just one, thanks to the inventor of the potato chip, Dr. George Crumb. From Mrs. Mary Jackson and her astronomical math to the inventor of laser eye surgery, Dr. Patricia Bath, Miss Gwendolyn Brooks, the first African-American woman to win a Pulitzer Prize for her books, to our 44th president, to the nameless left to perish in the devil's punch bowl, we won't forget. For those that dare to dream without restriction, those that keep reaching and defy the resistance. For those that walk past the new school to the one-room classroom in a church, Jim Crow nonsense. To Bessie Coleman, first black female pilot. To Ashada Shakur, who refused to remain silent. To the ladies whose lifetime goal isn't to jump the broom, but embody the spirit of Fannie Lou Hamer and inspire and move the room. You are all stars. Blessed by the bright morning star, no matter where you are. And this poem is dedicated to Claudette Colvin, who showed great strength and courage, who showed that you can take a stand by sitting.
In my interviews, I not only learned of African-American erasure in Ms. Fenderson Warren's poem and Juneteenth's theme, but also in Oberlin's shrinking African-American population. Both Professor Sharpley and Ms. Christian said that the community would eventually disappear and hollow out the spirit of the town. Here's Professor Sharpley, followed by Ms. Christian, both to explain what this means.
Oberlin has not been able to maintain its African-American community, and I don't think I've seen the importance of it. Mm. And I've often spoke about, it's real important for you all to keep your African Americans, to do something to keep them here. Mm-hmm. If this turns to a little white town, you're gonna lose so much, you know, of the flavor of Oberlin.
Right.
And I don't think they realize that. The African American community at one point was almost 50%. I doubt if it's 16% or 10% now. Mm. Yeah, you're gonna feel it. It's gonna be a different town.
We'll always have a history here now because of Juneteenth, but we will not be here.
So could you talk a little bit more about how the population, the black community in Oberlin, is aging out and how everyone is leaving? Why is that happening?
Well, for one thing, we had a big foreclosures area when the taxes went, you know, and the kids, you know, they get older, they want to fly with their wings, and there's no investment for them to come back to. There'll be no houses. I mean, we're back at where we are from square one. When black people came here, they had to have provisions to have either their own house or they had to be boarding in somebody else's. Okay, so the stages of land ownership and land has been one of the biggest problems. Oberlin College has always owned 50% of the land, okay? And so we had children to die be here in the 60s because they were living in remodeled chicken coops. They called them the chicken coop houses. That's when we got federal housing. So, first of all, you have an aging population. Where are the young people supposed to come from? You know, what kind of advancement is it for a young black person to come to Oberlin, okay? What do we have to offer, you know? The house that I have, I got it on the Farmers Home Bureau. I almost lost it because my city electric bills was as high as my mortgage. And when I wrote for a moratorium on this housing, as they're supposed to be able to do, when I say I can't pay the electric bill to live in Oberlin, so I can tell you how that will make you go. And it did. Many black people did have houses through the Farmers Home Bureau. But the bill, the electric bills here were high as their mortgages. But I managed to get a moratorium because they had to give me one. But they were getting ready to take my house. And they've taken back people's houses for taxes. Just took a house for taxes.
To learn more about the challenges Ms. Christian and others are facing, I looked into Oberlin's census data, news on property taxes, and information about utilities. According to the city of Oberlin, less than 15% of the city's population is African American. And the U.S. Census says that since 2014, the town has lost 400 people, or about 57 people a year. Considering that African Americans have historically been undercounted in state and national surveys, the actual numbers might be higher. As Ms. Christian noted, a factor of this flight may be residential property taxes. In 2018, Oberlin residents passed a disputed tax levy to finance the consolidation of their public school system. This levy increased residential property taxes by $133 for every $100,000 of property each year until 2025. For a scale comparison, residential property taxes have increased by just over that in the last 20 years, or by about $140, according to the Lorain County Auditor. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find information about abnormally high electric bills in Oberlin. But in any case, I found out through my interviews that the question of African American presence in Oberlin is not only one of financial accessibility. It's also about social belonging. Professor Sharpley told me about how reluctant some African American locals are to spend time downtown, even if it's just to get takeout. I imagine that this was part of why Juneteenth was so important. It's one of the only times African American locals spend time downtown en masse.
People come in town, black people, my shop, even in my shop, they just come in the back door, or a few of them started coming down. They're afraid to come downtown. They don't come downtown. If you look now, how many black people you don't see? They don't work for the college. You're not gonna see them downtown. They don't, most of the time. Or they run in, get to go, get the package, and leave.
So Juneteenth is almost like an opportunity to come here and feel safe. Almost.
Or have your event.
Yeah, or have
something
your event.
That is for you and your people and your culture. Mm-hmm. You're coming to celebrate your stuff downtown. Because otherwise, you don't come down here.
This separation between African American locals and the town spreads across more than one dimension. Shelley Shepherd said that Juneteenth is special both because she can meet with vendors who sell to her tastes and because on this one day, she feels like she doesn't have to apologize for who she is.
I can say what I want to say, I can do what I want to do, I can wear the colors I want to wear, and I don't have to apologize about how I behave, because the celebration in our culture, the little nuances are right there in front of us. You know, I can shop. The vendors are always, I always look forward to the vendors because it's something that I'm not going to get in town and it's not going to be watered down. I'm not really into pastels. I'm not really into, you know, it's all good for fair trade and stuff, but how about some people of color that have things to sell and be taken seriously? How about not just purchasing because you feel obligated to? How about you really like it? You know, if I can't make you really like it, because if you really liked it, you'd have it there all year long. Yeah, so yeah. And that festival, you have like a whole big table array of
places, you know. Mm-hmm. Some people wear their African garments and things. It's nice. You know, you don't have to apologize. Not that you have to apologize, but it's just there.
This feeling of power, connection, and belonging is not only personal to Ms. Shepherd. According to Professor Sharpley, the power of Oberlin's African-American resilience resonates in waves during the celebration's key events, like the parade, the MAFA ceremony of America's African Holocaust, and the Potter's Field celebration, which this year centered African-American women.
Well, one instance where you can feel the power of Juneteenth is when the parade is coming. I've always said, it brings tears to my eyes. When the parade is coming down, what is this, College. Mm-hmm. The people are gathered at the square, waiting. The parade starts down. And boom, 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 it's coming, it's dancing, they're singing. It's banners moving, ba, 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 ba. Cars are driving, da, 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 da. When it hits right there, it's just like a, it's like you can feel it. It's like the earth moves. When that parade crosses that red light, it's like if you had a camera that picked up ultraviolet movement, you see the air do this. I have stood there. I have been in the parade. And when you cross Levitt or you cross Main Street, it's just like whoosh. You can feel it. The people start clapping. It's just unbelievable. It happens when there's two cars. It happens if it's 20 cars. That's one of the most beautiful things. And Oberlinians don't often get it. Because a lot of times I used to have to beg them to be in the parade. Remember one year, Frederick Douglass's granddaughter was here. I had one or two people in the parade. I was so despondent. And she said, girl, we gonna get in this little black, it was a stick, I had a stick, a little black truck, it was a stick. And she said, behind how many people we got? She said, me and you gonna get in that car and we gonna wave. We did, same thing. When we crossed that street, whoosh, you could just feel it. It was just like the whole air just vibrated. It's every time that parade, every time it hits that space, it's the same thing.
Wow.
It's really just like unbelievable. To me, that and at the gravesite of the unknown baby that passed away there, I do a Yoruba praise. And when I break that glass, it's that same thing. It's like it brings whatever the power is of these people that have, whatever they've gone through, whatever they've done, it's like it's there for that minute. When Miss Christian does the Potter's Field, and we put the flowers on that bench and we spray those rose petals out there, same thing. Oof. You can feel it. You can feel it. It's just like it brings the power right there. That's why I do Juneteenth. That's it. Those are the most beautiful things that I see here. And sometimes also when they open, the preacher does the prayer. First prayer that opens up the festival. Sometimes, depending on the power and the feeling that the preacher has, when they say that opening prayer, same thing. Release. Festival is open. It's almost like it's quiet. And then when he does that, oh, I'm coming here tonight, da, 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 in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and you can feel it when he He says that amen. Same thing.
Wow.
So those events often really, really, really bring the power of Oberlin and the power of Oberlin's African-American community. Mm-hmm.
After all of these interviews, I reflected on how Juneteenth emphasizes freedom for everyone, a theme that has carried its focus on the ongoing resilience of African-Americans to the current day. But I also saw how the celebration reflects an increasing exodus of African-Americans from the town they defined the history of, and the challenges current locals still face in expressing themselves, coming downtown, and feeling like they belong. The dual-sided significance of Juneteenth hit me especially hard when I saw the smaller numbers of this year's event. Of course, Juneteenth had to be downsized because of COVID-19, but the event's shrinkage from its earlier enormous numbers also seemed like proof of the dwindling population. In the last part of my interview with Ms. Christian, she told me that Oberlin College needed to be part of the solution to the problem. I thought it would only be right that she have the last word.
Is there anything that you'd like to add about Juneteenth that I forgot to ask?
My basic theme is the college's role in tomorrow. If you own 50% of the land, then you need to be talking about what are your aspirations for the town? You know, when does the town and the so-called town and gown meet on planning for tomorrow's Oberlin? Okay, what you know, the college is part of the answer. And that's what has to happen. Oberlin College has to become part of the town. The town certainly has paid its penalty. And this pandemic has certainly lifted the skirt off to the bare necessities, okay? There has to be a way of survival for the town, okay? And the college plays a major role in what that's going to be.
You're listening to WOBC Oberlin, 91.5 FM, Oberlin College, and Community Radio. This has been The Weekly. All previously aired episodes of The Weekly are publicly available online. You can listen to them at anchor.fm/The Weekly.